We turn once again to the Song of Solomon. Looking this evening from verse 16 of chapter 4 to verse 8 of chapter 5. Some weeks ago we were saying that there are at least three facets to love. That is, need love. That is, gift love. And there is appreciation love. Gift love is the love that compels us to give a gift to others. Need love is the love that enables us to receive and to accept the gift from others gracefully. Appreciation love is the ability to appreciate, to admire, and to be ravished both by the gift and its giver. There are three, at least three, components of love, authentic love. Gift love, need love, and appreciation love. The man who made these thoughts popular in recent times was C.S. Lewis in his book, The Four Loves. But the thought itself is not original to C.S. Lewis. It is original to the mind of the living God. For what we have in the Song of Solomon, and particularly in chapters 4 and 5, is the expression of gift love, of need love, and of appreciation love. Chapter 4 begins with a song of the bridegroom describing the beauty of his bride. And this is appreciation love. He describes her as godlike, as a perfect human being. And so he desires to be with her and to be joined to her. But chapter 5 ends with a description by the bride of the beauty of her bridegroom. From verses 10 to 16 of chapter 5, she describes the bridegroom as one who has a head of gold. And until it reaches a crescendo, and she says, he is altogether lovely. There is no human language, she says, that I can use to describe just how gorgeous and handsome and attractive my royal bridegroom is. This is appreciation love. But you notice that there is gift love and there is need love. At the end of chapter 4 in verse 16, she invites her bridegroom, and this is what she says, "Awake, north wind, and come, O south, blow upon my garden, that its spices may flow out. Let my beloved come to his garden and eat its pleasant fruits." And so she says, this is my invitation. Let him come and let him unite with me so that he may enjoy my beauty. This is my gift to him, and my gift to him is an expression of my love for him. But you see, in chapter 5 and verse 1, it is now the bridegroom who is speaking, and he says, in response to her invitation, I have come to my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. And then he looks at his friends and he says to them, eat, O friends, drink, yes, drink deeply, O beloved ones. She offers him the gift of her love. And he responds by accepting the gift of her love. And so he says that he has come into his garden and he has enjoyed the bounty of that garden. He has enjoyed honey from the comb and he has been satisfied with both the milk and the wine. The love that is expressed in giving, the love that is expressed in receiving, the love that is expressed in admiring and appreciating both the gift and its giver. And my brothers and sisters, throughout the Bible, but especially in the New Testament, you and I are called as Christians to grow in love. Grow in love for God and grow in love for each other. But what does it mean to grow in love? Well, it means that you and I will have the love that allows us to receive the gift that God has given to us in Jesus Christ. To look at him and to admire him and to appreciate all that God has done for us in Jesus Christ. It is to receive. But love also means that we return our love and our gift to him. We do it in worship on the Lord's Day. We give it with the praises of our lips, with the tithes and the offerings that we bring with us each Lord's Day. We give it by living our lives as a living sacrifice that is pleasing and acceptable to him. That then is love. And then from verses 2 to 8, the woman or the bride begins to give to us an account of what happened one night. Now, it is difficult to be sure if this was a historical, factual event or whether this was a dream that she had. Either way, she presents it to us in poetic language. Verse 2 begins with her saying, I sleep, but my heart is awake. It is the voice of my beloved. She is asleep, and yet she is not sound asleep. And in the night she hears the voice of her beloved bridegroom. And there is a plea from him. And this is his plea. He knocks, saying, open for me, my sister, my love. My dove, my perfect one, for my head is covered with dew, my locks with the drops of the night. She seems to be asleep, and yet she is not fast asleep. And there that night in her bedroom, she hears the voice of her royal bridegroom, of him knocking at the door, pleading to be allowed entrance into her house. Notice, by the way, that he speaks of her both in chapter 4, but also here in chapter 5, as my sister, my beloved one. He calls her my sister, reminding us that in the Eastern language, marriage is a relationship between two equal partners. The woman is not the chattel of the man. She is not a thing that he possesses, but she is a human being made in the image of God. And the blood that makes the man the human is the very same blood and the very image of the living God that makes her an equal human being too. And so he speaks not of the language of a thing or a property, but the language of a relationship. He comes and he pleads with her. And her response is given to her in verse 3. And it is the voice of protest. She says to him, "I have taken off my robe. How can I put it on again? I have washed my feet. How can I defile them?" She says, it is too late. It is inconvenient that the time is unsuitable and the circumstances are not suitable. He makes his plea. She voices her protest. And then from verses 4 and 4 we are told there is his persistence. "My beloved," that is the royal bridegroom, "put his hand by the latch of the door, and my heart yearned for him." He is not taking no for an answer. He is persistent, and her heart is moved within her. And what does she do? In verse 5, she responds to that invitation and that plea, and we are told that she arises to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the lock. This refers, I think, to an Eastern Oriental custom that before you went out to meet a guest, especially at night, but not exclusively, you always drenched your hands and your body with perfume so that there would be a fragrance about you when meeting with a visitor. And so she says, "I heard his voice. I heard him rattling the latches of the lock. And I went up. And after my protest, I arose from my bed. I went out all ready to meet him." And then in verse 6, she opens the door, but then she discovers that the royal bridegroom is not there. He has turned away and was gone. Her heart is broken and she is sore. And she says, "My heart went out to him when he spoke." And she begins the search for him. "I sought him," she says, "but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer." But she is not going to give up. She walks to the city and walks about in the city. And there we are told in verse 7, "The watchmen who went about the city found me. They struck me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took my veil away from me." The watchmen who are watching the city by night see this woman, and they think that she is a woman of ill repute. And so they are aggressive and violent towards her. They attack her. They wound her. And she carries the bruises of her search for the beloved. And she has failed. And finally she looks at her friends, whom she calls the daughters of Jerusalem. And instead of the bridegroom pleading, now it is the bride who is pleading with her friends, and she says, "If you find my beloved bridegroom, then you tell him that I am lovesick. My heart is broken. I am grieved. I am wounded because I am missing him. This is the story of this bride. But may I suggest to you this evening that the story of this Shulamite woman is the story of every human heart also. That this woman's story is my story and it is your story also. This is the story and this is the summary of your life and of mine. And this is what I mean by that. You see, in verse 2 she says, I sleep, but my heart is awake. Is that not the case with you and me today also? The years may have rolled on, but nothing has changed. We fall asleep in our beds, but we are never ever sound asleep. When we are children, we have nightmares at night. When we are young, we have dreams of love, of marriage, and of a future. And then, when we get a little older, we try to sleep, but we are not sleeping because our dreams have come crashing down. And if our dreams have not crumbled in our own hands, then it is work, children, and the pressures of life in a fallen world that keeps us awake. We are sleeping, and yet we are not. And then we think that as the children get older and they leave home, then we will be able to fall asleep, only to discover that the older we get, the more the nightmares return. Now we are afraid of poverty. Now we are afraid of ill health. Now we are afraid of retirement. And then we are afraid of death itself. We are always trying to sleep, and yet we are never ever fully asleep. And all the time, all through our lives, we are awake and we hear the voice of love. There is one who is knocking. There is one who is speaking. But we say to him in a voice of protest, the time is not right. The circumstances are inconvenient. This is not my time. This is not the right time. But the voice refuses to go away. The knock is always there. Finally, we get ourselves ready. We arm ourselves, we build all our defenses, and we begin to come to the door. And we come only to find that the beloved is no longer there. Our hearts are broken, and we are grieved. We try to find our love in other people, and we find that they disappoint us. We try to find our love and our joy in things, in our wealth, in our houses, in our cars, in our pension pots, in our work, in our families, and in our children, only to find that they always end up disappointing us. Our hearts are broken. We are crushed within, and the pain is unspeakable, and the rejection is intolerable. What do we do? We don't always give up so quickly. And like this woman, we go in pursuit of love, of joy, of happiness, and of security. And the more we try, the more we find that we are beaten and battered. And the more we struggle, the more we are wounded and we are bruised. Life is hard. Life becomes cruel. Human beings become cruel to us. They do us the most unthinkable things. They not only break our hearts, they seem determined to break everything within us. We are wounded until we finally say to each other, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I am lovesick. Each one of us here this evening is lovesick. And the word there that says sick of love or lovesick means that we have been grieved, we have been wounded, we have been hurt, we have been made unwell by love. But you see, the search for love is ultimately a search for something bigger and for something greater. The search for love is the search for security and for companionship. And ultimately, the search for love and the search for security is the search for home. It is a search for home where you and I can be fully satisfied, where you and I can be fulfilled in what we are, where you and I can be exactly what we want to be, and where you and I can be exactly what God meant us to be. The search for love is ultimately a search for home. And you know why it is a search for home? The Bible tells us that you and I were made in the image of the living God. And God placed us in his own home, in the Garden of Eden. The Garden of God was meant to be our home. You and I were made by him, and you and I were made to enjoy him forever and forever, to look at him and to admire his beauty, to receive the gifts from him and to enjoy them and to be ravished by him, to love him with all our hearts, with all our souls, and with all our might. That was home. That was meant to be home for each one of us. That still is the home we are longing for. But something came into the world, and it was sin. It was the rejection of God. It was the rebellion against his word and his authority. And because Adam and Eve had fallen from a state of grace and innocence, because they were now sinful people in the presence of a holy God, they could no longer live at home. They could no longer call the Garden of Eden their home. God drove them away from their home, and the angel of death stood between them and home. And since that day, you and I, as children of Adam and Eve, are exiles. You and I are a wandering people, always traveling but never arriving, always walking but never finding a place of rest. And because we lost our home, we lost our security. And because we lost our home, we lost our love also. We lost our capacity to love God. We lost our capacity to enjoy the love of God. And we have lost our capacity to enjoy the gifts that God has given to us. Every one of us, as human beings, is lovesick. We want this love. We want the security and we want to get home. But we know that we are not at home. But you know, God, before He sent Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden, He made them in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15 a promise. The promise that God Himself would come to their rescue, that the exiles would not be eternally exiled, that they would not be able to find a way back home, but God would come to them and God would open a new and living way, that they would get home, that they would enjoy security, and finally they would discover love itself. And what God promised in Genesis 3:15, He fulfilled 2,000 years ago in the person of Jesus Christ, His Son. You see, Jesus Christ always had a home. It was the glories of heaven, but it was even more. His home was in the bosom of His Father. It wasn't just the glories of heaven. It was the love and the very heartbeat of the Father and the Son in the eternal Trinity. But the one who was entitled to a home became homeless, until He said that the birds of the air have their nests and the foxes have their holes. But the Son of Man has nowhere to lay down His head. And so it is, you see, in verse 2 at the end, the royal bridegroom says, "For my head is covered with dew, my locks with the drops of the night." He has walked long and far. The journey has been costly for Him. He has been exposed to the elements, both to the dew and the rain. But He persevered in His pursuit of the loved one. And this is Jesus Christ. He came with dampness on His hair. He came at great cost. He, the one who was entitled to a home, made Himself homeless so that you and I, who are the homeless, might find our home in the presence of God. And this is what the cross is all about. For the cross is the ultimate human symbol of rejection and homelessness. For the cross meant that this person was truly and comprehensively homeless, rejected by God and accursed by Him, rejected by the community and condemned by them. And yet on that cross alone He hung, taking your sin and mine, your guilt and mine, and your shame and mine. And my dear friends, until you and I discover something of the beauty of Jesus Christ, until you and I taste and see that the Lord is good, until you and I drink from the living fountains of water, and you and I begin to drink the love of God in the face of Jesus Christ, you and I will never find love, never find security, and never find our home. May God bless His word to our hearts. We conclude by singing from Psalm 73. Psalm 73. And we are singing here verses 23 to 26. Psalm 73. At verse 23. Nevertheless, continually, O Lord, I am with Thee. Thou dost me hold by my right hand, and still upholdest me. Thou wilt Thy counsel while I live, wilt me conduct and guide, and to Thy glory afterward receive me to abide. Whom have I in the heavens high, but Thee, O Lord, alone? And in the earth whom I desire, besides Thee there is none. My flesh and heart doth faint and fail, but God doth fail me never. For of my heart God is the strength and portion forever. Psalm 73 verses 23 to 26, and we stand to sing to God's praise. Thank Thee for the revelation that God, who made us in His own image, has loved us with an everlasting love. It is a love that will not let us go, the love that will walk with us in the valleys of life and will stay with us in the mountaintops of our experience. And whatever this new week may hold for us, even if we should have to walk the valley of the shadow of death itself, give to us the deepest possible assurance that God loves us, and teach us to love Thee in return. And now may the God of peace, who brought up our Lord Jesus from the dead, that great shepherd of the sheep through the blood of the everlasting covenant, make you perfect in every good work to do His will, working in you that which is well-pleasing in His sight, through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen.